from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Happy Fresh Fridays here on the G and Ursula Show. And I just want to give a shout out to, wait, Ursula, am I allowed to say shout out? Okay.
Why not?
Okay. I'm trying to be professional with this. I make sure the shout out part. I want to give a shout out to our listeners.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, I know we have the show set up and I know we do all these things, but it is the interactions with our listeners. It's like being in study hall and you're supposed to be doing your homework, but you're talking to your friends. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's like for us. And I just want to say thank you for all the listeners that do engage with us at all times. It really is important. I really got to say that.
Yeah, it really is. Seriously. But I also want to do a shout out to the listeners who are part of our show every single day. And maybe they aren't on our text line. But if you want to be part of our text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. We always enjoy the interaction. And, by the way, you've got to check out the picture that G posted of Dave Ross this morning wearing some really fancy shoes. I just found out the price tag of those shoes, and you will never in my lifetime see me pay that amount for shoes. But Dave, for a brief moment today, was wearing them. And you've got to check them out. And I was like, they suspiciously looked like your sized feet.
Looks like it's all day. All right. We got one of our favorite guests. Let's get to it.
What's new at 10?
And we want to say good morning to Michael Medved, host of the Michael Medved Show on 770 KTTH. How you doing, Michael?
Doing very well, and I can assure you I'm wearing very worn, cheap shoes.
You and me both. I do have my art supports in them, though. Okay, so we're going to start off, though, Michael, with what is going on in the other Washington. The U.S. House passed four different bills to fund police departments all across the country. So the first would provide $60 million a year for local police departments to get body cameras, something that we're still trying to do for all police here in King County, also to do de-escalation training, among other things. 153 Republicans supported this bill, 55 voted against, and there were 9 progressive Democrats that cast a no vote, protesting a lack of accountability measures that they wanted included. So most Republicans did vote no on the other three bills. One would open up grants for states and local governments to train and dispatch mental health care workers to behavioral health emergencies. And only 3 Republicans voted for the Mental Health Justice Act. And it's important to point out that Representative Jamie Herrera Butler from Washington was one of them. I want to get your thoughts on this, Michael. Just the breakdown and what your thoughts are about this.
I just don't think we really know enough yet about how dispatching social workers and mental health workers really does impact the crime rate. I think we have a crime emergency right now. And there was a piece in the New York Times, as a matter of fact, about how even though they have slowed the increase in murders, the increase in crimes involving car theft, theft of every kind, the breakdown of law and order is palpable, and it's terribly damaging in this country. It is one of those things that drives down values in a neighborhood, and I mean values not just business values, but values generally, the values of family and safety and decency. And I've looked at this a great deal. I'm sure you have as well. The notion that spending more money on government psychiatrists or on government social workers to help people, it has not shown to have a measurable impact on crime rates. More police resources do. And boy, do we see that right here in Seattle.
Yeah, but wouldn't that be in conjunction with recognizing you need more police? Every single department across the country needs more police, and you mentioned
Absolutely.
Seattle. But we're also talking about some of the root causes of crime and why crime is going up. And you say it's not that we need government-funded psychiatrists, but you know, we're dealing with drug addiction, mental health problems, and there are some things that would make more sense for someone who is trained in those areas, not taking away from police and law enforcement and enforcement of you know, to catch the criminals and prosecute them, et cetera, but also to realize that some of these other things play into that and to the increase in crime.
On the margins, I mean, look, I think the root cause of crime is people think they can get away with it, and they very often do. And I know that sounds simplistic, but it's the reality. And we've seen that in the whole history of crime rates in the United States. Some of what was done in New York City and Los Angeles and in Seattle and all of the big cities across the country was toughening up and making sure. I'll tell you what causes this huge increase of crime, the idea that there are places in this country, I don't think Seattle is one of them yet, but maybe, where people can walk into a store and shoplift and there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, and people doing mass shoplifting, basically swarming into stores. This is completely untenable. Part of what I just saw this morning is there's a video that was put together. I think it was led by the Everett Police Department or some of the people up in Snohomish County about some of the legislation that's been very destructive here that makes it illegal for police officers to do pursuit on things like car theft. And basically what we have in so many of our localities, unfortunately, and that's very much true in this state, is people making it tougher for the police to do their job, because otherwise everything breaks down. And by the way, look at Oregon, where you talk about some of the drug problems that, yes, are tied up with the crime, and they're a crime all in themselves, and you have over 100,000 people dying of fentanyl overdoses. One of the problems you have in Oregon is they basically have pulled back on all enforcement of anti-drug laws. And it's a problem.
Hey, Michael, you know what?
Sir.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to agree with you about all of the crime that has happened. I'm going to agree with you that the Republican Party, it's more about law and order and more about holding people more accountable for crime. You even said it, people being able to walk in these stores and be able to shoplift without any, I mean, it is bad. For once, Michael, I am on your side. But I got
Well, thank you. And it's not my side or anyone's side, and should not be
care.
A partisan issue.
Right.
And again, I respect and salute those Democrats, and there are some of them out there who also are for supporting the police and recruiting more of them.
Yeah. But I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Then why does the GOP have so much support for Donald Trump?
I knew you had to go there. Look, I think there are some questions that are ultimately unanswerable. And the appeal of Donald J. Trump for people who really do believe in law and order and following the law and being accountable for things that you do that break the laws, I think that's one of those questions for the ages.
Oh, no, but no. Let's answer that now. I'm curious. I am going to agree. There needs to be law and order. I'm just scratching my head trying to figure out why Donald Trump is the leader for the Republican Party if you guys care so much about crime.
Okay, let me put it this way. The fact that he right now polls well with support from Republicans doesn't mean he is the leader of the party. By the way, he hasn't spoken meaningfully about crime for a long time because he's been so obsessed with overturning the election and focused a great deal on himself and his own welfare and his own attempts to. I mean, right now, the even part of what President Trump said yesterday about conducting his businesses in a way that he can get away with. You agreed with me. I'm going to agree with you. I think that Donald Trump is the wrong leader for a crusade for law and order.
So, okay, look at that. Okay, I'm going to move because I wanted to bring up, I mentioned Representative Jamie Herrera Butler. And last week when we were talking and we were talking about Governor Inslee potentially running for a fourth term, which G and I are not big supporters of, and I know that you feel the same way. And then we were saying, okay, but who could the Republicans put up as potential candidates who would have wide appeal? Would Jamie Herrera Butler be someone who could have a life after she's been doing in Congress?
Sure. And by the way, this is why we get along so well here, because right after I hung up with you and you had asked me to give a name of somebody who might be, I thought Jamie Herrera Butler.
Yeah, I did too. And I was like, oh, I should have brought it up.
Though the thing is, I think what's likely to happen here is I think that it's very likely that the congressional district, the Democrat whose name I forget right now, is actually going to win that congressional seat against Joe Kent. And Jamie will try to make a comeback in a district like that, because I know her a little bit, and she really enjoyed and honored the idea of serving in Congress. She worked very hard on it, and I think her main desire is to get back there.
Michael, I just want to tell you, man, that you got to come in studio sometimes and hang out with us. That'll be great. This was something that was back in March, and I just want to tell you first, I apologize for bringing this to you, but I have to, because many Americans will be headed to the polls worried about what Congress could do with the majority, right? Especially after the Dobbs decision opened up the door to revisit Supreme Court rulings on gay marriage, the right to contraception. And, oh, how about interracial marriage? Here's what Senator John Braun from Indiana told a reporter back in March. I want to get your thoughts on this.
So you would be okay with the Supreme Court leaving the question of interracial marriage to the states?
Yes, I think that that's something that if you're not wanting the Supreme Court to weigh in on issues like that, you're not going to be able to have your cake and eat it, too. I think that's hypocritical.
Michael, where
okay,
are you?
That's appalling, and he hasn't studied it. He doesn't know the history. There's even a good movie about the Loving decision.
He doesn't know the history.
He doesn't know anything about it. I mean, it was appalling. Look, it's interracial marriage, marrying someone, not discriminating based on race. It's a violation of the 14th Amendment.
Then why?
I mean, there are 700,000 Americans who sacrificed their lives for the principles encapsulated in the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments right after the Civil War. And we don't believe that separate but equal is equal in this country. And that means that you can't say that simply because of the color of somebody's skin, you have to rule that person out as a marital partner. And by the way, it's also right now, do you know that the numbers show that 60% of Republicans support gay marriage? The public demand for undoing the Obergefell decision, which, by the way, Congress cannot do because it's an interpretation of the Constitution. The support for leaving gay marriage alone, for leaving those couples, many of whom you know, I know,
yes,
are people living good lives, raising kids in many cases. And for goodness sake, this is, it's a time to move on.
Okay, I'm in full agreement with that. I mean, just the fact that you're bringing up gay marriage or interracial marriage, I mean,
it's not so something we should fight about. We fight about too much in this country.
Right, exactly.
And there's no reason to revisit fights that are over.
Exactly.
The fight on gay marriage is over. I'm not sure there's even one state that would attempt to do that. And
I think a lot of people thought the fight over abortion was over too. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And there is someone on the Supreme Court that has brought up some of these other things, which is why it's important. And I'm talking about Clarence Thomas.
Correct. Right.
Yes. So we can't just say, well, that's kind of done.
This is a technical thing, and this is something that from my time at law school was a big emphasis then, because they had just decided in 1965 they decided the Griswold decision, and that was a decision that established a federal right to privacy. That's something that Clarence Thomas has always questioned. And what he was questioning was not the reality of gay marriage or the reality of interracial marriage, because he's involved in one. He wasn't questioning that. What he was questioning is the basis for it. In other words, if you use as the basis for making bans on interracial marriage unconstitutional, and you go back and you read the Loving case, that's based upon the 14th Amendment. It's based upon equal protection of the laws, not a fictional right to privacy. So that was the point that he was making. And of course, it's wildly I wish he hadn't made that point, because it scares people.
It does scare people. Okay, I need to end on a positive note. So there's something that we can all agree on, and we love our Seattle Mariners. The Mariners' magic number is 9. How do you feel about this potential after 21 years?
Oh, it's just wonderful. And it's inspiring to see some of the really the great people, like yesterday, Jared Kelnick was the hero. And to see him after his disappointing time and being sent down to Tacoma, coming and contributing to the team. One of the players that I enjoy who doesn't get much attention is Sam Haggerty, and who has really stepped in to fill up some gaps. And again, such a terrific addition to our whole community. A Eugenio Suarez, who has hit more home runs than anybody in the last 5 years in Major League Baseball, except for Aaron Judge. And by the way, there's another tip of the hat to somebody he's 6'7", 280 pounds, and drug free, not somebody, and he's hit 60 home runs already, and I hope he gets 61 tonight. And then the Yankees lose to the Mariners during the playoffs.
Good stuff. Michael, it's always a joy hanging out with you, my brother.
Oh, thank you. And again, look, some of these things, one of the things about politics that I think that most people get in America is it's not good guys versus bad guys. It's a bunch of people, sometimes very flawed, who actually are trying to do the right thing. And by the way, I think we're going to end up with divided government this time. And that seems to be what the American people want.
Mm. Okay, let's talk about that more the next time we chat on Friday.
You bet.
All right. Hey, coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, have you ever heard of the sandwich generation? Well, I just found out what that was a couple days ago, and Ursula is really going to help us out with this topic. We'll talk about that next. G and Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on this beautiful Friday morning. I call it beautiful, even if it's cloudy, because it is Friday, and I think we're just all in a better mood when it's Friday. But do you know that one of four of us is part of this generation, the sandwich generation? And if you haven't heard that term before, it's those of us who are still caring for kids at home, but also caring for our older relatives. And according to Parents.com, all those hours of unpaid labor from transportation and doctor's visits, both for your kids and for your elderly parents, or dealing with insurance companies or long-term care facilities, attorneys, and then again, also dealing with the, you know, soccer games on the weekend, et cetera. It is taking a mental toll on this entire generation. And again, it's now 1 in 4 in the U.S. So it is a large percentage of the population. And I am just coming out of it. I mean, my parents, I'm so fortunate that my parents are still alive. My dad is 91 years old now. He's in long-term care, and he's been getting great care, and I try to visit him frequently. I think that the fact that he is getting the help that he is, and I'm so thankful for the people at Columbia Lutheran, I think that's added years to his life, honestly. My mom and us as a family, we couldn't do it on our own. After a while, it just got to be too much.
You said something the other day, and I don't know that, and I'm sure it's been said, but I don't think I've ever heard it said the way that you said. And what you said the other day, you was like, guys, my parents didn't plan on living this long, right? You remember, you can't, it's one of those things, like when you start thinking about that, and I was thinking like, yeah, you start getting into the 90s, right?
Yeah.
You start getting into that, and then you get into the 90s, and then those listening right now, you guys know better than me, Ursula, you know, how expensive is the care for our loved ones that are elderly in this country? And so if you know that, you know the price of that, now let's start talking about late 80s, 90s, maybe into the early parts of 100. That's a lot of money. And so when you said that, I said, I need to think about maybe going out of the country to go live.
Well, and I want to talk about that because now my mom is at least living part-time in the Philippines because mm-hmm. my dad can no longer live at home. And, you know, my sister and I are the only family members still here. And it became very, very challenging. My mom is still well. She's still in good health. And but she still needed a lot of help with things.
Right.
And if we weren't there to be able to provide that help, it costs a lot of money to be retired anymore. And in this area, if you didn't do the proper planning, it's hard to afford to be retired. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But on top of everything else, I mean, it just more and more families want. I mean, in a perfect world, you would be able to have your, you know, maybe you want to have your parents live with you, but you're also still raising your kids. I mean, that is, you are scrunched in between yeah. as the caregiver for on both ends. Mm-hmm. And again, now my kids are older now, but there was a time when they were still in high school. And you're also trying to be helpful to your elderly parents. I have the greatest amount of respect for people who are taking it full on. But one of the things that you have to realize is that you've got to take time for yourself.
I was thinking about this to Ursula. I don't know what's going to happen going forward. I think that baby boomers and Gen X, maybe Gen X being the last, were able to take part in real estate and able to buy in the homes and be able to get some of this wealth to help them take care of their parents a little better than I believe the millennial and Gen Z will be able to do. Gen Z is like, yo, how can I take care of my parents? I can barely take care of myself. So this is going to be a very weird exchange. Does that make sense what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Well, it does, and it is going to get that much harder. But just remember, I mean, people are living longer. You may think, that's a long time away, and it's never going to happen. You have to have these conversations with your parents when they are well. Don't wait till they're sick before you have these conversations. How do they want their retirement years to look? You know, and if they were going to deal with, if they had to deal with something catastrophic like my dad did, mm-hmm. How are you going to afford that? I mean, know that when you live, and a lot of people say, you know, they don't want to have to deal with nursing homes and assisted care facilities. I mean, for a lot of people, that is the last resort. Just know, though, too, it's extremely expensive. It could be like $10,000 or $15,000 a month. Jeez. If you need the kind of care,
right.
You know, if you have to have skilled nursing, for example, I mean, it can just be outrageous. And, you know, and there's a whole range of it. And a lot of, if you don't have long-term care insurance, it's not covered.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that really compounds the problem, especially here in Western Washington, is the real estate market. Because how many people can afford to live in the same communities that they grew up in, that, you know, have the opportunity to live close to their family? I think that makes it especially challenging. And I think one of the most heartbreaking things that I've seen personally is watching the people that take care of your parents, too, because so many of those, your parents and your kids, because so many of those people are paid pennies on the dollar, and watching someone who is tending for your child or your very elderly relative and knowing that they are financially struggling and because of the burdens of raising your own child and the financial cost there and what your parents are paying, you can't do anything about that situation.
Yes.
It feels like a very difficult position. And Ursula, I've been kind of watching what you've been going through, and I've watched what my parents have gone through, and I have kind of this looming sense of anxiety because I know that's a position that I will be in, I will choose to be in, but
yes.
Wow. It's a lot, and I respect the people with all my heart that take care of their parents like that.
And I know people who've done much more than I have, even for my parents, and I commend them. I mean, taking it on, but my message would be, if you cannot do that, you should not feel guilty either, because I mean, that's a lot to take on. And I keep telling my kids, okay, don't worry. Well, we're going to have this all taken care of, so you're not going to have to do this.
Well, I want to echo and piggyback off what Chef said. And I ain't going to lie. I don't know a lot of people that have handled their parents the way I and Chef have personally seen you handle, you and Honey and your siblings handle your parents. And I think, and seeing what you have been going through, not just the financial part, the emotional part, the storage, all of those things, and still be able to, you know
storage.
What I mean?
Oh, wait. My gosh. You just brought me into that traumatic period.
I mean,
that was a lot. At one point, there were 6 storage units.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you, Ursula really has taught me. So, y'all, if there's some storage units out there, I'm telling you, you better be prepared.
Yeah, they're counting on collectors. They want people who love those trinkets and don't want to give them up. They're counting on you.
Looking for the tchotchkes.
Yes.
All right. Coming up next in Scenarios, we do that. Happy Fresh Fridays to all of you. Gene Ursula.
This is the G and Ursula show. G had to step away for the rest of the show. Nothing's wrong. He just had something that is set up that he needs to attend. So it is going to be you, me, and Chef, and Nick for the rest of today. And we are going to do scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo.
Okay, so G did leave a scenario for us, and this person writes, our daughter is about to turn 16, and she has always been daddy's little girl. I do have a great relationship with her, but with them, it's something else. It's special. So we're trying to decide what to get her for her big birthday, and I say that we should throw a big party and give her a nice gift, but my husband wants to go overboard. He thinks that she should get a new electric car, as in $40,000 worth of a new electric car. Yes, we can afford it, but I think it's just way too much, and she should save her money and buy her own car. She cannot be his little girl forever. I say it is better parenting to help them grow up than it is to give them everything. What do you think we should do?
First of all, I would just like to point out that you decided to read this so that you would no longer be in the position of having to answer the uncomfortable question first, but I think this one's a slam dunk.
Okay, good.
Definitely do not buy your daughter a new car. A couple reasons. I always disliked the kids at high school that drove brand new Beamers, etc., into the parking lot. I had to give them side eyes just because, you know what? Most of us have to work for things in life, and you are right, writer. When you give your kids something for free, they do not appreciate it. You can very easily buy her a comfortable car, a safe car that is much less money. This is about your husband wanting to give the grand gesture, and maybe that is his way of showing her that he loves her, but I think that parents do this stuff. They take care of their kids financially for another reason. The parents that pay the cell phone bill, that pay the car insurance, they give the kids gas money, they buy them a brand new car, car, it is not necessarily because they want to provide everything for them. It is because they are scared of losing control of their child's life.
Yes.
And they want to maintain a measure of control and have a say in where they go, who they talk to, and they get to have the ultimate trump card over their kid's head. Hey, I'll turn off your phone if. Hey, I'll take away your car if, etc. Now, if you make your child work for that car, you don't have that. If they're paying their own bills, you don't have that. The only threat you have over them is kicking them out of the house. So I think that these gifts come with huge emotional strings, not just the fact that it's a lesson poorly learned for your child. Get her a used car for sure.
A used car? Okay, yeah, would even be a huge gift. Nick, do you want to weigh in?
Well, I just don't like the kind of focus. I don't think this guy is really doing it for the daughter. I feel like he's doing it, like Jeff said, to kind of flaunt.
Thank you.
More what he's trying to say, like, look what I can do for my daughter. And I feel like it's kind of a culture of, like, there's some sort, you know, like the trophy wife kind of, like, description of, like, when you're in a relationship.
Like, oh, yeah.
Look,
how,
look
daughter,
how rich, you know?
We
it's
are.
Like, look at what I can do for my daughter kind of attitude. That's exactly what I'm feeling with this.
I think you both are just spot on. I'm thinking back to my 16th birthday. I think we went to my favorite Mexican restaurant in Eugene, Oregon. I was able to wear, you know, that fun
hat. Oh, you got the giant sombrero? Sweet.
I blew out a candle on a cake and called it good. I did not get a car. And I think that if you get your kid an electric car, a $40,000 gift for her 16th birthday, what's going to be for the 18th? Then what's going to be for the 21st? It's like setting this expectation that she. It's just, I think it's setting up your child for failure. Honestly, I love your idea. If it makes it more convenient, and you want, you know, there is one thing about giving your child a car. If you don't have enough cars in the household,
yeah,
and you don't have to drive them around everywhere, and that is helpful. But it shouldn't be this expectation to have such an ostentatious gift, like an electric car, $40,000 at the age of 16. You're setting her up for failure, and you're setting yourself up for failure as parents.
Not to mention the fact that, you're setting a financial standard for your daughter that any guy is going to have a hard time matching.
Right?
So, you know, look out for the guys in her life. But can I admit something?
Yes.
I think I would actually be more likely to buy a daughter for my car or a car for my daughter than I would for my son for one reason, because there's something about having a girl now where I think, you know what, I never want her to be in the position as a teenager where she has to rely on someone else for her transportation, where she's in a position that she can't get out of, or she feels an obligation to stay because she needs a ride from someone. That may be less logical these days in the days of rideshare.
I was going to say Uber.
Yeah, that's not always convenient, depending on where you are. But, I mean, I think there is a certain argument to be made for providing some freedom and transportation for your child.
Well, I think time is going to tell with this one, because once she has to get a new car, it's going to be set up for failure, like you said. She's got to learn to change a tire on her own terms, it seems, but she's got to enjoy the ride while it lasts. I mean, the dad pretty much spoiled him, it seems, and she's got to enjoy the ride while she can, but, setting it up. She needs to do some knowledge with some cars if she wants to.
Well, and the other thing is she needs to work to, you know, maybe pay for either maintenance, insurance, whatever it is. 206 texted in and said, we bought our daughter a used car for her 16th, but it was also selfish because she played volleyball on two teams and needed a ride to practice every dang day. So happy to get her a used Corolla that was reliable. And again, you know, for that reason, that would make sense. But you don't have to go for that $40,000 car. Okay, still ahead, we are going to do Agree to Disagree. This is the G and Ursula Show.